Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell-Fugerski.
Hi, welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell-Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere, and it does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States alone living with some form of brain injury. But do you know that most folks do not even know about brain injury? I know I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. And yes, I did say caregivers, because brain injury is not a solo event. It happens to you if you are the survivor, but it also happens to family and friends around you. So on the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression and neural fatigue, anger, or various other symptoms of brain injury. And believe me, folks, there are a lot, many that you can see and many that you cannot. But for me, for those of you who might be new to my show, here's just a teeny tiny snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And this is the part of the show where I always remember to say, please have a pencil and paper nearby so you can jot down any URL that I might mention that you might want to look at later. I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show starting in August 2014. The last of which in November of 2014 featured a discussion with David himself. I also interviewed David on my April 19, 2020 show for his perspective on brain injury after, at that time, it was 15 years. Now we're up to 17 years, just keep piling on, which I guess I'm glad they are because, well, just because. You can figure out that answer. So I wanted his perspective on his brain injury, but I also wanted his perspective on the COVID-19 pandemic, which was just beginning at that time. And because David is a professor of microbiology, or was a professor at Columbia University in microbiology, he had a great understanding for the virus that was impacting our world. And I wanted him to break down scientific kind of papers that the scientists were putting out and people were talking about and break it down into layman's terms or laywoman's terms so we could understand it. And so he did. And so you can find my archive shows on my blog, again, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. All one word, all lowercase. just click on the air show menu tab. It's under the category section on the right sidebar. So it's really easy. Or just type in David Figurski and you will get anything that he has posted on the blog. He has a whole section under on COVID. So if you're interested in any of that, getting scientific news right from the professor's mouth, then you can just check it out there. So you could also read our complete story in my book titled Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing and released in 2018 in November. You can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as an ebook, as a print book, and as an audiobook, which I was able to read. So I was really excited about that because it really gives more emphasis to the story, I guess. Yeah. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me. And while you're there, just find Prisoners Without Bars and click on it, and you'll see a bunch of stuff under there. But one of the things I always like to point people to is the cast of characters, because as you're reading the book, you could also have the cast of characters on your computer open to see who they actually are. I have about 30, I don't know how many, I never counted, but about 30 folks who were very involved in David's recovery on the website. So it's kind of fun, I think, when you're reading a book to see who the people really were. There are also pictures in my book, too, so you can get a little glimpse of the inner workings of our lives. So I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative, and I hope that you will visit the shows of other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And you can also tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on the weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, to listen to your favorite hosts as well. So Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States and in 36 countries. So now, sit back, relax, and, as they say, enjoy the show. Tonight, I'm going to be talking to Casey Chafee, and I just want to, before I do that, I want to give you a little introduction about what we're going to be talking about. Have you ever had a headache, a stomach ache, or pain in the neck? You probably answered yes. To at least one of those, if not all. I can say yes to all of those. We've all had a degree of pain in our lives. Remember when you were six and fell off of the swings or your trike? How about the time you broke your arm during soccer practice? Ouch. It's inevitable. Pain touches us all. Fortunately, though, for most, acute pain comes and goes. And though at the time we are experiencing the pain, we think it's endless and unbearable, we get through it. The body heals itself, and regular life returns. That is not the case for those who suffer from chronic illness or pain. Chronic pain is pain that lasts 3 months or longer. Oftentimes, the cause is unknown. It can occur anywhere in your body. More commonly known types of chronic pain are fibromyalgia. I have a cousin who suffers from that, so I know how badly that can affect people. It's a muscle and joint pain throughout the body. Arthritis is another one which affects the joints and can also cause inflammation and degeneration. And a condition that is all too common for survivors of brain injury is neurofatigue. Neurofatigue is extreme exhaustion and makes a person unable to deal with ordinary living. Daily activities, getting up out of bed even, brushing your teeth, getting your breakfast, etc. These are just a few examples of chronic pain or illness, and there are so, so many more. Chronic pain or illness affects one's entire life. It prohibits folks from every day enjoying their natural living. And, you know, I mentioned a cousin. I have also, I guess it's another cousin. It's actually my husband's cousin, who has chronic pain. She's had it for, oh gosh, as long as I can remember, maybe 20, 30 years already. And she has to live with this daily, and she has to adapt her life around that. And I have to say, she once came to visit me for 3 days. We were doing a staycation at my house. And it was like she was never out of her bedroom. She was in her bed most of the time because she was in that much pain. So I got a first eye glimpse of that, or I guess a bird's eye glimpse of what she was going through. So it kind of gives me an idea of what someone goes through with chronic pain. Did you hear me say an idea? Really, it's just the merest of ideas. If you're not going through it, you probably have no idea what it really means. So anyhow, this evening, Casey Chafee, a brain injury survivor and the author of her book, 30 Days of Understanding Chronic Illness and Pain, joins me to talk about chronic illness and pain and how she faces these challenges every day. So, Casey, hi, are you there? And welcome to the show.
I am. Thank you for having me.
Okay, it's a pleasure. Casey, we're just going to jump right into some questions now. And I just guess I want to know, because you said, I read your book and I loved it. I loved it. I think it's good for everybody out there to read. I like, Casey and I were talking before the show, and it's a short book. It's 120 pages. And I said, like, I just love it. I love the size because it's not something that is overwhelming. You can sit down and read it in a couple shots or maybe even one, and just really glean all this wonderful information that she's put together from firsthand knowledge. So, Casey, you said that you suffered from pain for more than a decade. Yes. Can you talk about what brought on your unending pain? And once you, you know, and within that, can you explain what that means in your daily life?
Well, my pain mostly started when I was 18 years old. I was diagnosed with arthritis, which you don't really think about that in 18-year-olds too much. But I was a very dedicated gymnast for a lot of my younger years. And so when I got arthritis, I just kind of figured, you know, that's probably par for the course because I was requiring a lot of my joints. I was asking them to do unnatural things, and so I just kind of thought that's the next natural stage. So while I was suffering with that, after I got married, I got pregnant with my first child, and that was not a smooth pregnancy, to say the least. From the very beginning, I was very, very sick. I threw up about 50 times a day through the entire pregnancy. I ended up with an at-home IV just to keep fluids in me. I ended up losing 25 pounds and was actually under 90 pounds. Usually people gain weight when they're pregnant. I lost. And really the doctors didn't know why, but it was like that up until I gave birth. And then they ended up putting me on some medication after I gave birth, and that medication had estrogen in it. And when I would take the medication, I would be nauseous and vomit for 8 hours straight till it was completely out of my system. And so that's when I learned that I have an estrogen intolerance, which really strange for a female. I didn't even know it was something that existed. But apparently I'm okay with the estrogen in my body that's natural, but through both my pregnancies, because the estrogen increases, my body was constantly trying to get rid of it.
Wow.
So I had two extremely rough pregnancies, and after that was when a lot of my head pain started. I started getting migraines that my head would throb, I would vomit. I had extreme sensitivity to light and sound. I would be very confused mentally, and all the things that come along with migraines normally. They would get so bad that I would have to leave my desk at work and go in the bathroom and cry because there was nothing else I could do. I ended up giving up caffeine, which includes chocolate, which some people are like, how do you not eat chocolate? But I thought
know,
I could
that's
try to
me. How do you not eat chocolate?
Yeah.
How do you not eat chocolate?
Well, that's what, when people have asked me, how do I not eat it? I say, well, when I see chocolate, I don't see something that tastes good. I see a 4-day migraine.
Yeah.
So that's because it's inflammatory. Yeah, it's inflammatory, so it would inflame my brain, and I would get a migraine from it. And that actually helped keep my migraines down a little bit for a few years. I was actually doing a little bit better. I still got migraines, but they were getting better. And then my migraines started to increase, and I would have dizzy spells, and my vision would suddenly go really blurry. Sometimes it would happen when I was driving and I would have to pull over, or it would happen while I was in a store and I actually would have to sit down in the aisle in the store because I was going to pass out.
Oh, wow.
And so that started getting worse, and then suddenly my migraines started being like 5 days a week where I couldn't even get out of bed most days. It took prescription medicine just for me to get out of bed and leave the house. And even on the days where I didn't have a migraine, I had a constant headache. I had a headache that never went away. And so finally, after 15 years of seeing doctors and being told that, well, migraines are kind of a normal thing, we'll just put you on this medication. Okay, we'll switch you to this medication. And after 15 years of that, they finally did an MRI and found that I had a fairly large cyst that was growing in the middle of my brain. And that was putting pressure on a lot of areas, including my optic nerve, which is why I would get the blurred vision and stuff, because it was putting that pressure right on that nerve. So
why do you think they didn't pick up on this before? Why didn't they, you know, you said you have been having the migraines for so long, and yet you weren't given an MRI from the beginning. What do you think? Why do you think it took so long for them to figure this out?
Well,
I know that's an impossible question to answer.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Actually, I had an MRI in 2008 where they found the cyst, but they did not tell me about it.
You're kidding.
It's a very interesting story because they did not tell me anything about it. And that was actually in Wisconsin when I was living in Wisconsin. And in 2014, I was living in Kentucky, and my doctor here recommended doing an MRI. And when he got it, his response to me was that the cyst had grown since my last MRI. So they had known that it was there, but nobody had ever told me that it was there.
My goodness, and how are you even supposed to, you know, monitor it or take care of it or request assistance? That's
right.
Crazy.
Yeah, I had a doctor friend of mine tell me that it was probably because 2008, they couldn't do anything about it. There was no surgery that could touch it. And so they probably just figured, well, there's nothing that can be done about it, so we'll just leave it there.
Don't worry you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so then there was a new surgery that a doctor in California had created, an endoscopic surgery that could actually get into the center of the brain and remove it. And so after they told me about it in 2014, by that point, there was this new surgery that could get to it.
Okay, so now I'm wondering, was it a good idea they didn't tell you? Maybe. Maybe because then you would have just worried about it. But,
right.
But then on the other hand, what if you knew and you could have searched out things or known about the surgery earlier? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. When people ask me if I'm mad about it or if I want to sue or anything like that, my response is that I'm thankful for it because I wouldn't have been able to do anything but worry that is it going to burst open? Is something going to happen?
Yeah.
And I would have just worried about it. And I found out, I feel like everything led to me getting the best surgeon that I could get at the right time when it was the surgery that was available, and I feel like it all worked out the way it was supposed to.
Okay, well, that's good because, you know, my husband David feels the same way about something that happened to him because he had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, so it's the first bleed that he had. And then when they opened him up to take care of that, they found an aneurysm. When they opened him up to take care of the aneurysm for the third surgery, they found an AVM, an arteriovenous malformation, which is often likened to a time bomb in your brain. Now,
yeah.
David was in a coma this whole time, and he was not able to make any decisions. And those decisions were left up to me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, how do I make a decision on having my husband's brain opened up for the third time in 2 weeks? And yet I had to. And I knew because it was a time bomb, and the doctors, the surgeons informed me that it could be there forever and not have any problem at all. And many people are born with AVMs. They're congenital. You're simply born with them. And you live with them through your whole life and nothing happens. But if it does happen, it's like a bomb and it's going off in your brain, you know. And so I had to make this decision, and I decided to go ahead and have the surgery. And afterwards, long time afterwards, maybe almost a year, I talked to David about it. And I said, well, what would you have had me do? And he said, I'm glad you got it done, no matter what the outcome. Because he says, I don't know how I could have lived with that, knowing something's in my brain that could go off at any time when I'm driving down the street or anything, you know. So it's a hard decision to make, but it's one that I had to make, and I know other people have to make those hard decisions too. But I understand what you're saying, that it would have been difficult for you to have lived with that knowing it was there. So
yeah.
Maybe it was better that you didn't know. Yeah, that was my point.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing that would have been better, I think, about knowing that it was there is that I would have had a reason for why I was feeling the way I was, rather than just being told, oh, there's nothing really wrong, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. So you've got that that to deal with, like going to doctor after doctor, like what's happening to me and why is this happening? And that can be so disconcerting to not understand. And, you know, so often when something is happening to me or I have a pain somewhere, I very often don't go to doctors if I can help it. But if something is really, really distressing me, and I'll go, but I never have the confidence that they're going to find out what it is, or they're going to send me for a million tests to figure it out what it is. And I guess that's the case for everybody. But you know, but it's very confusing. Sometimes the medical field, when you're involved in it like that, it's very confusing. So, yeah. And then, Casey, you also wrote that you suffered in silence that whole time, those 15 years or whatever the time period was there, not wanting to burden others with your life problems, your medical problems. But you've since had a change of heart. So why do you think it's a good idea to let others know about suffering with chronic pain?
Yeah, well, there's a few reasons. Once I started opening up and sharing my stories, suddenly people started coming out of the shadows, and people that I've known for a long time saying, you know, I suffer with this too, or I suffer with this. And they were feeling alone and I was feeling alone, and yet we could have been supporting each other through that. So because we were all doing it in silence, nobody knew that others that were in our circle were going through the same things.
Yeah. That's so true. I think that happens so often. And, you know, when you find out other people are feeling the same way you are or dealing with the same kind of issues that you are, it is reaffirming. It allows you to just be more comfortable with it, because I know people, and I do the same thing, I don't want to go complaining about everything, because when you do that, then people want to stay away. You know, if you call complaining,
right,
that's all you're going to do is complain. They just say, forget this, you know, and they will move away. But on the other hand, if you do talk about it, they're going to understand better. Not only that they might also be suffering from something and can feel some camaraderie with you or some connection, but they also can learn about what's going on with the situation. Like, I know a lot of people talk about fatigue, neural fatigue after brain injury. The survivors will talk about neural fatigue, which is extreme exhaustion. It's not your normal oh, I'm tired, I just really worked hard,
right,
or whatever. It's not that. It's something that just goes on. Like, you slept for 8 hours and you still can't get out of bed. Your body is exhausted. Your mind is exhausted. And nobody can understand that. It's not just, I'm exhausted because I worked too hard or I played too hard. You know, that
right,
can be solved with a nap or a good night's sleep. But so I think that kind of thing is also good because it gets the information out there. So people might start to understand. To what you're doing is raising awareness. And I think that is really important, especially around, chronic pain or brain injury, which is a brain injury. I mean, the chronic pain is the result of something that's going on in your brain. So if people can understand that better, there's more of a empathy for
yes,
people who are going through it. So that's
there's so many stigmas and taboo subjects that we have in our culture,
mm-hmm,
that people try to shy away from. And
yeah,
when I started opening up, I told myself I was just going to be open. So I started sharing things that were embarrassing, that I had to be very vulnerable to share. But I think it's important to share those things as well, not just the highlights or the main things, but even the things that have a stigma around them, because the only way to break that stigma and to allow more
exactly
people to be open is to talk about it.
Exactly. And I think we were talking before the show about this. I hope it wasn't on the show because now I can't remember. But we were talking about this before because I'm writing a chapter in a book that I'm working on with Deb Brandon, who is my co-author, and we're writing a book about the lens of a caregiver and a survivor looking at brain injury through those lenses. And the chapter we're talking about right now is on mental health. And I, when we had our discussion about the chapter, I told her a story about something that I would never have told anybody. And then I prefaced it, afterwards I said to her, but I don't think I'm going to put this in the book because of the stigma attached to it. I said, I don't think
yeah,
I can put this in the book. And then I'm writing the chapter today. I'm working on my part of the chapter today, and there I am, and I'm reading the stuff, and I'm thinking, you know what? I have to put this part in the book because it's honest and it's true, and it can also help other people to know that, it happens to all of us, some of these things that you don't want to talk about. But they're important to talk about, to take away that stigma. And I have to think about back in the 50s when cancer first became prevalent, we were all talking about cancer and it was really high on the medical list. But if you had cancer, you never wanted to say the C word, the cancer word, because it was kind of taboo at that time. There was kind of a stigma attached. You had cancer. Oh, my God, what did you do to get cancer, kind of thing. Well, since Betty Ford came out about it, many, many years, maybe it was around that time, I don't know, when she came out about it. And it kind of took away the stigma. People started talking about cancer, started accepting cancer. And cancer now is a word on anyone's tongue, and nobody is putting people down because they have it, kind of thing. So I think that's what it's all about. It's a matter of making people aware. And the ways we do that is, Casey, through your book, through my book. I may as well say your title while I say your book. Your book, 30 Days of Understanding, Chronic Illness and Pain. And through my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. It takes away the stigma that's involved with all of those kinds of things, and it makes the readers aware of these kinds of things. And you know what, folks? It's better to read these stories before something happens to you, so you have some kind of knowledge about it. We're all running for the books after something happens. I know I did. When David had his brain injury, I wanted to read every single thing I could get my hands on about brain injury. I'd never heard about brain injury before. I said that in my opening. And I just needed to know what other people were going through, what was happening to them. And so I read the books, and then eventually I wrote a book about it to help other people to understand. And there are a lot more books out there now, because we're talking 17 years later. But still, it's a topic that needs to be out there. And the chronic illness needs to be out there, the pain, letting people know what it's all about. Seeing the inside story is what it basically is when you're reading someone's story about these kinds of things. And you can say, hey, that's me. That's happening to me right now. This is what she did to help herself. This is what he did to recover. Maybe those things will work for me too. And, you know, we're not there as doctors or any kind of, we're not promoting any kind of medical advice at all, but we're letting you know what happened with us that might have to help you. Who knows? You know, that you just got to be open about it. So anyway, let me see. Well, let me go into this question. I have notes here saying, and I think that I don't think we've answered this one, but I'm not going to ask that one yet because I think we might have covered it. All right, so a lot of the stuff that I have here we already talked about because you went into a very clear explanation of what was going on. Okay, let's go into chronic fatigue. Sometimes, and I mentioned this earlier, called neurofatigue. And that's another ailment that folks just don't understand. And we all, like I said before, we all get tired, even exhausted after that long day of working, playing, you know, just living, period, just living. But tired and exhausted can usually be fixed, like I said, with a nap or with a good night's rest. But chronic fatigue or neurofatigue persists. It isn't relieved by a nap or a sleep. Those who suffer with this extreme fatigue are often labeled as lazy because they say, I can't do anything, I'm too tired. They can't get their jobs done, I'm too tired. They can't do the dishes, I'm too tired. You know, so people look at them and say, well, you're just being lazy. That's just an excuse. Believe me, folks, it's not an excuse. I've talked to too many people that have to live with neurofatigue. They all say the same thing. You know, and you can read a lot about that on my blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, with the different survivors of brain injury on Survivors Speak Out, because they are all saying the same thing. It's not that they're lazy. They want to do things with other folks. They want to be social, but they just can't. It takes too much. And folks don't realize that the exhaustion is persistent, yet uncontrolled by the victim. And Casey, you talked about the spoon theory. This goes right into this neurofatigue thing, which was created by Christine Mizarandino. I've talked about Christine so many times on this show, but it's always worth talking about again because she had such good points as she tried to explain her chronic fatigue to a friend. And she was at a restaurant with her friend, and she grabbed several spoons, about 12, maybe 10. I don't know. The number doesn't make a difference. But she told her friend that each spoon represented her energy supply for the day. She said that she used the spoon to get out of bed, another to shower, and another to get dressed. She needed a spoon to prepare her breakfast and yet another to eat it. She also needed a spoon to drive her to her job. Okay, so if you're counting, you can see that Christine used up six spoons even before she arrived at work. She used half of her allotment of energy for the day. When those 12 spoons are used up, she's finished. She has nothing left. So when her friend Lulu calls her to ask her to go out bowling that evening, she has to refuse. You know, I'm sure she's not feeling good. She'd probably like to go bowling with her friend or dancing or to a movie or wherever her friend wants to go. But she's not able to because she's totally run out of energy. Think about a car with gas. You know, when that car runs out of gas, it's not going anywhere. And Christine used up all the gas for that day. So she was not going to go anywhere, even though she may have wanted to. So, Chris Casey, I bet you understand what Christine is going through. And do you sometimes feel like that too? And can you talk about how chronic fatigue affects you and your family?
Yes, I do understand spoon theory very intimately. And, yes, I do experience it. Chronic fatigue is not just being very tired. Like people will say, I understand because I have young kids and I don't get enough sleep. If you're just overly tired, you can get over that by resting. You can get over that with a good night's sleep and you feel good and you feel energized the next day. With chronic fatigue, it doesn't matter how much sleep you get. You are never going to feel rested when you wake up. It almost feels like you wake up with the flu. Your muscles are weak, you get brain fog, you feel dizzy, your body just feels heavy. And it's kind of like if in my book I give the example of plugging in a cell phone at night. If when you go to bed, you plug in your cell phone, in the morning you expect it to be 100%. But for somebody who experiences chronic fatigue, they unplug their cell phone in the morning and it's only at 20%. And you need to make it through your whole day on that 20%, because once that battery is dead, it's dead. And with chronic fatigue, it can be a little confusing sometimes. It's kind of unknown sometimes because you don't always have that 20%. Sometimes you might wake up and you have 40% and you feel great. You're still never going to get to that 100%. But you do have more than you have on other days. So it's hard to plan ahead of time. So if you're planning a social event for a week from now, you don't actually know how much energy you're going to wake up with that day.
Yeah. And so that's when you end up having to cancel if you don't have the energy. And that's where your friends don't quite understand. You know,
right.
And that's where it comes in, where they think, oh, well, you're just being lazy or you're being antisocial, or they can give you any number of reasons why you're not able to go to do whatever thing. So they're not quite understanding. So how do you make them understand? Are you able to?
Well, I think spoon theory is a great way to relay that information to somebody who doesn't understand. I will often explain it to people like, I've always been fairly active. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I used to be a gymnast. I used to do half marathons. Mm-hmm. Being active and fit has always been a big part of my life. When most people exercise or do some physical activity like that, they get this boost of energy. Like they get mentally clear. They feel like they're ready to go. Like a lot of people will exercise first thing in the morning because it just gives them energy for the day. When I exercise, I have to come home and take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if it wasn't a very strenuous exercise, it takes everything that I have to do it. And I need to recharge a little bit of my battery to then get back to daily tasks.
Wow, that's got to feel frustrating, you know, because you used to be able to do all that before this happened to you. And now, so, you know, when you feel like you can go out and do it, obviously you're feeling like you can at the time you're going out to do your exercise. And then when you come home totally depleted, that's got to be totally frustrating. Do you feel that?
Yes, it's discouraging because usually people, the more they exercise, the longer they can exercise for, because the better shape they're getting in, the more endurance they build up.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's exactly the opposite. I still try, I do go to exercise classes, and I try to move my body so that I can stay as fit as possible, but it doesn't get better for me. I don't gain endurance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, okay. So do people seem to understand that when you explain that to them or not?
Most people do. Yeah, you still get some of the comments of, oh, yeah, I understand what it's like. I've been so tired for the last 5 years. So you get some people who don't understand, but I think for the most part, people are willing to listen and understand.
Okay, well, that's good, because that's important, that, you know, the getting that information out so that people can understand. I think when we say it enough, too, and people hear it enough, they start to internalize the thoughts more clearly, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, and
I'm
I think
guessing.
We need to define terms because when people hear fatigue, they just think really tired.
Right.
And so I think it's helpful to define terms as chronic fatigue is not just really tired. Really tired is when
right.
you have 3 young kids in the house and you're working a full-time job and you're not getting enough sleep at night. That's really tired, but that's not chronic fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like we said, that can be taken care of with you know, more sleep, a little vacation, that kind of thing, where chronic fatigue simply cannot. It's going to go
right.
on and on. It persists. So, yeah. Okay.
And like with chronic fatigue, you talk about a vacation. With chronic fatigue, if I go on vacation, usually I'm in bed for the next 3 or 4 days once we get back home. Because
yeah.
I have, like when you talked about spoon theory, sometimes you can borrow spoons from the next day, but you end up having to pay it back with interest. So if you use up
yeah.
all your spoons on vacation, by the time you get home, you're 2 or 3 days in debt, and you have to make that up.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times an event like that will put me in bed.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about. Again, I don't remember this, whether I was talking about before or not. My cousin, where we did the staycation at my house. Did I say that online?
Yeah.
On the air?
Yep, you did.
What are you talking about? Okay. I wasn't sure if I talked to you before about that or not. But, I mean, that's what it was. I mean, she just her driving over with us. I went and picked her up. It was an hour and a half drive. Brought her back to my house. And that wore her out. The drive. She did nothing but sit in the back seat. And it wore
yeah.
her out. And it's hard for people to understand that. But I know her, and I know she's not faking it. I know this is something that she would like not to be in her life, but it is. But it's hard for people to understand that, well, what do you mean you're tired and you're exhausted and you can't do anything? We couldn't go out. We wanted to go out to dinner that night. She was not able to go out to dinner. Once I started realizing what was going on, all my plans changed for that those 3 days. I said, that's it. We're going to stay home. She's going to rest and do whatever she can. We'll visit whenever she can be up. I will make dinners here at our home. We're not going to tax her extra by going out. You know, and so, and why did I understand that? Because I've been in the brain injury community for so long. But, I mean, had I not, I might not have understood it. I might have just thought, like, well, why did you come over, you know, if we're going to do that? But I did understand what she was going through. And so I was able to accommodate her to make her feel as comfortable as she could while she was here. And I still think, even though she, you know, ended up sleeping much of the time, I still think she appreciated and enjoyed the time that we had together. And I think that's one of the things that we have to think about as people, caregivers or friends or family of members that are experiencing this kind of thing, the chronic illness. I think we just have to understand them better so we can help them. It makes their life a whole lot easier. And
yeah, I'm sure she did appreciate your patience with her. And when this is your life, you still want to live. Like, you don't want to
yeah.
just spend your life in your bed. And so even if it's those little moments of socialization or those little moments of getting to see family members or those little moments of things that can bring you happiness and joy, you still want to enjoy those things and you still want to live your life. You just have to do it around your chronic pain and fatigue.
Yeah, I totally think I understand that. That doesn't make sense, does it? I totally think I understand it. Think about that one, folks. See what you think of that statement. Anyhow, Casey, many folks don't present with outward signs of their illness. I've seen photos of you, and you look, quote, I always say this, quote, perfectly normal. And the normal state comes from my friend Juliet Madsen, who has a traumatic brain injury, and people are like, normal, but this is for you, Julia. You look perfectly normal, yet you suffer from many invisible maladies. A migraine cannot be seen. Neither can endometriosis. Many folks suffer or live with cancer, diabetes, neuropathy. Often these ailments are not visible, and yet they're extremely debilitating. Many brain injury survivors live with invisible TBI. They look perfectly normal. And again, I quoted that. But inside, they're in pain. It's very lonely and frustrating when the world around you cannot understand your pain. Can you relate to that? And how does it affect you? And how do you respond to folks in your life who don't quite get it? So there were three questions there, sorry. Can you relate to that?
I do relate to that, yes. As you said, you cannot look at me and see any of my chronic illnesses or the pain that I have every day. Like you said, I look healthy. People would mm-hmm. think that I'm healthy. I'm fairly young. I look fairly fit. Nobody would guess that I have going on. And that it does make it difficult because people will, like you said, they'll automatically assume that you're lazy or if you cancel plans that you're rude. Or oftentimes, too, people will think you're just faking it to get out of things because one day mm-hmm. you might be able to go out and socialize and have fun, and then the next time you have to cancel because you're in bed. And so people will think you're mm-hmm. faking it on those days. So, yeah, it's hard. And I think there's hard things in both the visible and the invisible. If you have a visible thing where people can see, sometimes they will be more understanding, but you'll also mm-hmm. get stares and whispers behind your back and things that you have to deal with that. But invisible, you don't get those stares and those whispers, but you do get the judgments of, well, why is she yeah. acting like that? Why is she walking like that? Why does she cancel so many plans? Why is she not working? You get those kind of things when it's invisible, for sure.
Exactly. We talk about that a lot on this show, the invisible versus the visible. Now, my husband, David, has a visible brain injury. The results of his brain injury are visible. He has a lot of disabilities. And the first thing you'll see is he has a challenge in walking, balance. He has a balance challenge. He can't walk very well and without assistance. And his right side of his face is paralyzed somewhat. His speech is a little bit different. So, yeah, there are many other things. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. But those are visible, and people can understand those. He also has some invisible ones that they don't get. They don't understand. He does have issues with his bladder, so he has to make sure that there's a restroom nearby Always that kind of thing. And people don't quite get why he's so worried about that kind of stuff. In fact, I was for a long time. Why are you worried about it? I'll get you to the restroom. But no, because there's an invisible thing going on, and because he doesn't have the complete control over his body where he can just get up and go to the restroom, so things like that. And I think that's what makes it difficult. So that each of them have their downside, and you mentioned the reasons why for the invisible, because people don't understand that. I think you're perfectly fine. At least with David gets the understanding that something's wrong. But then you've got people who will talk down to him as if he were not intelligent, or they often treat him as a child, He's a grown man, folks, and he's a professor of microbiology with his brain completely intact. And yet because of his appearance, he is treated differently. So, yeah, so both of them have their advantages or their disadvantages. And so how do you let people know, Casey, that those people that just don't get it, how does you let them know that even though you are you look fine, you still have these issues.
Yeah, well, I think like we talked about at the opening is being open and honest is the way we're going to break some of these stigmas is because, like I said, I was silent about what was going on with me for a long time, and so I didn't even give people the opportunity to understand because I tried to hide it. I wanted to look, like you said, normal, healthy. I wanted people to not see me as weak or being a big baby or a complainer. You know, we live mm-hmm. in this, like, social media world where you get, like, these perfect snapshots of everybody's life. And so everybody's life looks so wonderful and perfect on social media. There's uh-huh. other things that are going on beneath the surface. And so I think opening up and being honest and sharing these vulnerable things that we have going on in our lives and sharing our weaknesses and our struggles, that's the only way that people are going to understand, because we don't give them an opportunity to understand if we don't try to explain it to them.
Exactly. You know, when you were talking about that social media and the snapshot of perfect life, it just brought to mind something that David said to me today. We were looking at a private message from my son and daughter-in-law of their new baby, you know, and they send all these pictures of it, of this little child to us. And David commented, she goes, "My God, she's such a happy baby. Look at how she's smiling here. She's smiling here." And I said, "Well, David, they're not going to take pictures of her crying to send to us." So
right.
I'm sure she has her crying moments too. But that's exactly what it is on social media. People don't send their crying pictures or post their crying pictures. Generally, they post their happy pictures. So you're
right
about that. You know, that's so funny. I'm glad I was able to pull that together, because I think that was a funny statement that he made. And I thought, well, you know, they're not going to put her crying pictures up. They want to show how happy she is and how sweet. And she is. I'm sure she is. She probably never cries anyway, you know. But anyhow. So
yeah, you had mentioned endometriosis earlier, and that I talk about
yeah.
that in my book as well, because I have that as well. And part of the endometriosis was I had talked about how I like to be fit and active, but I would wake up in the morning and my stomach would be flat, but by the end of the night, my stomach would look like I had a basketball in it, and there was nothing I could do about it. So one day I gritted my teeth and decided to be very vulnerable, and I took a morning and a nighttime picture of my stomach, and I shared it on social media. Because, like I said, I'm being very open, so I showed everybody what my stomach looks like when I go to bed at night. And it was hard to hit share when I finally got to the point of ready to share. It was hard because I did not like the way my stomach looked, and it was hurting my self-esteem that it would look like that every day, and there was nothing I could do about it. But once I hit share, I had, like I said, I had people email me that said, "I have endometriosis, and I have this all the time, too, and thank you so much for sharing it and for bringing awareness." And because if we don't share those vulnerable moments, those things that are hard to share, people just aren't going to know.
Yeah, you're so right on that. And that's why we're sitting here right now, Casey, talking about all these things. That's why you wrote your book, so that people can understand and get some points out of that. It's why I wrote my book. It's why I do my blog. It's why I do the radio show, because we need to get the word out there for folks to understand what so many folks with brain injury or various ailments are going through. Because if you don't have it, and I hope you never do have to have it, but if you don't have it, you don't really get it. And so if you have somebody that's living it and can give you a bird's eye view of it, it really does help. And like you said, when you hit that share button, you touched a lot of people. You know, they may not want to be, they may not have shared either. They may not have, maybe they're living in silence, you know, behind the cardboard wall or something, and they're not letting anybody know. But when you did that, you opened up a lot of other people's minds and maybe made, you know, help them to understand, you know, that they're not alone. You know?
Right.
And I think that's, it's going to be good. So I'm going to go on to another question here. If you've ever lost someone you love, okay, like a family member, a friend, even a loved pet. Now, I would have probably never have added that loved pet here, but I just ended up getting a pup last June for the first time ever in my life, and I am madly in love with her. I have never, ever, ever, ever been a dog person before, but it's a 180-degree switch for me. So that's why I added the loved pet, because I know it's going to be devastating. If ever you have had a family member or friend or that loved pet, you've probably gone through the five stages of grief as detailed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. Acceptance doesn't mean giving up. It just means acknowledging, okay, this is what it is. I'm going to make my life and build my life around what I have to build my life around. So those are the stages that most people pass through when they are faced with grief. And those five stages are also experienced by people dealing with critical disease or ailments like cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, MS, or chronic pain, even to name just a few. Grieving the loss of a life changed, a life lost, or so different from before the illness is understandable. Casey, did you find yourself going through the five stages of grief?
Yes, and many times. It's not uncommon to go through those stages, get to the end, and then start over again, because you're not the same person that you were before. And so you do need to grieve the loss of that life that you had before. And after all, I mean, this is not the ideal life. Somebody living with a brain injury is not what they planned for their life.
Right.
And so you need to grieve the loss of your future plans that you may have had, your future dreams that you may have had, because your expectations have to change. It doesn't mean you can't have dreams and goals and expectations, and they just have to change. They just have to be a part of your new life now.
Exactly. You know, and it's funny because after David's brain injury, he did change. You know, he's a different person than the man I married. And I like both guys. I always say this. I always like to tell this story. So for any new listener, you might enjoy it. For any listener who's been here before, you've probably heard it. But and I really liked the old David, you know, the guy I married. Obviously, I liked him, you know. And so when this new David came out of the operating room, he was different. He, you know, not only his appearance is different, but his whole persona is different. And it was like, wow, so now I've lived with him for 17 years. I lived with the other guy for a lot longer than that. But I said to David one day, you know, I was like, if I don't know what I would do if the old David suddenly emerged and, you know, you became who you were before, I would really enjoy that. I would like that. But I've grown so much, so fond of this other guy, and I love him, that I would miss this guy if he were gone. So it's like really a bizarre situation. and David laughed, and he said, hey, wait a minute. The other guy left. Good riddance to him. So I think that's too funny. But so David has come to terms with his new life, and I think that's one of the things that everyone has to do. I mean, you know, frankly, in everyone's life, whether you have an injury or not, your life is always evolving and changing. And you do, naturally come to those terms with as it does. Of course, when you have a brain injury and it happens immediately like that, like David's did, and your life is turned on a dime, and it's one minute it's one way, and the next minute it's 180 degrees different, it's a little bit more difficult to figure out how to do that. But again, it is your life, and you've got to deal with it, whatever you get, I guess. I mean, it's easy to say, it's harder to do, but it's easier when you can accept what is there on your table or in your deck so that you can move on and live your life to your fullest. No, it's not exactly like it was before, but things change and you have to adapt and change with it and make it.
There are always going to be things in our lives that we can't control. So we just, the only thing we can do is to make the best of it. We can learn lessons. We can take each day as it comes. We don't have to focus on all the things that we can't do. We can appreciate the things that we can do and learn to cope with whatever the new reality is for us.
Exactly. I think, you know, that's all anybody can do, no matter what the situation is you have to, you know, make the best of what you have. You can have lemonade or you can have, I don't know, what else could you have? Well, lemons are sour, I guess that's why that goes there. So make the lemonade, you know, make the lemonade and enjoy it.
Right.
You know, it's same thing as like my radio show. It's called Another Fork in the Road. Well, we all come to forks in the road. Like I said, sometimes the fork is something you get to choose. Sometimes it's a fork you don't get to choose. But you're on that path, and you have to, you don't have to, I suppose. You could go down the slippery slope. But your better choice is to, you know, make the best of it. I think that is probably the best thing to say there.
Yes.
So anyhow, yep. Casey, support is something that we all need when as we struggle through life, any part of our life. We all need support. Folks enduring extra burdens such as brain injury, all those things I mentioned earlier, diabetes, cancer, chronic brain, chronic pain, or any number of other debilitating conditions need ongoing support. Usually at the onset of any of these issues, family and friends flock in to help. But as time moves on and the urgency of the situation passes, people seem to fade into the background. It's typical behavior, but the one needing the support long after the initial emergency fades is left to struggle on his or her own. Casey, does that sound at all familiar to you?
It does. I think we see a lot of that, like that people really do want to help temporarily. When someone is first diagnosed with cancer, they lose their job, they are recovering from surgery, you know, any darkness that they might have in their life, people are often willing to jump in and bring meals, send money, send cards, you know, help in any way they can. But it is difficult to keep up that level of support for the rest of somebody's life. If somebody has a chronic illness, that's not going to go away. That's going to be with them for the rest of their lives. And it's hard to expect people to keep up that high level of support for the whole time.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the brain injury, too. It's not going away. It's going to be there forever. So what kind of support did you initially have?
Well, mostly my husband, who has been wonderful. He is very supportive. On days when I can't get out of bed, he definitely takes very good care of me. I did have his family is also very supportive. So, like, when I was going through my pregnancies, they took very good care of me. They've always been very supportive and understanding of what I've been going through my pain and stuff. And so I have had a lot of support in my life. I know that many others do not have that level of support, but I have been very blessed and grateful to have so many people in my life who are there for me.
Yeah. And you're so right about, you know, when at the onset of any kind of a major problem, people do come out. You know, they come out and they help, but then they fade away because everybody has their own, his or her own life, and they have their own jobs, and they have to go back to their own lives eventually. And your problem isn't their problem. They were there to help you very, you know, nicely in the beginning, but it's a normal response where people come in and then they fade out. But it can be a little difficult when all of a sudden you're left there to stand on your own or struggle on your own. And it's, and I know, I mean, that's how everything was for us, with David and me. People were there for the first couple days. Then they all receded. Well, my daughter and son stayed for a couple weeks. They were able to get more time. And then they all receded. And since everybody lives all over the United States, it wasn't that the support wasn't there anymore. You know, and I think people need that support, whether it be just even an email or a text, or, you know, how are you doing? And not just, hi, how are you doing? But how are you doing? You know, how are you doing? I try to make a point of doing that. I have a friend here whose husband had a stroke, and as the caregiver, she always hears the question of, how is your husband doing? You know, and she gives the, you know, appropriate response and everything. But rarely do people ask the caregiver how they are doing. Because as I said earlier, or I thought earlier, maybe I didn't say it, but I thought it, brain injury or debilitating diseases like this are not just the problem of the person who has it. It's also affecting everybody around them, especially their caregiver. So I think for just a little piece of advice out there is for folks to ask the caregiver, or even if you're the survivor, ask your caregiver how he or she is doing. Seriously, how are you doing? Are you okay? What do you need? Because they're often the forgotten partner in a situation like this. So I just think that's, I just want to get that out for you.
Yeah, definitely.
In case we're running out of time, we're starting to get close to the time where we have to close down, but I wanted to ask you, what was your motivation for writing your book, and how do you think it will help others? Your book, 30 Days to Understanding Chronic Illness and Pain.
Well, it's interesting. I've never thought of myself as an author at all, but I love to research and share information. So actually in 2018, I wrote a book called 30 Days to Understanding Autism. I had done, April is Autism Awareness Month, and so I had done, every day I did a post about autism, about sharing information about it, and people asked me if I could put that in a document and give it to them because they found it so helpful.
Hmm.
So my husband encouraged me to take all that and more and turn it into a book. And so I did that in 2018, and I have received a lot of feedback that it's been so helpful to people. So my husband said, you should write a second one. And I thought, what will I write a second book on that means a lot to me that a lot of people don't understand? And so that's where I came up with the chronic illness and pain. Because I thought there is a lot of misunderstandings and stigmas and other things out there. And so I decided to write on that. And I wanted it to be a very easy, quick read so that it didn't look intimidating, that it was something that people could give to family members to maybe help them understand. If people aren't having a lot of support in their lives or they're finding that people aren't understanding, I wanted something that they could hand out that didn't look like it was going to take 2 weeks to read. So I wanted that, and I also wanted something that was going to offer support and encouragement to people who are going through something hard. Because sometimes you do feel like you're all alone. And I want people to know they're not alone. I want them to know that there is hope and there are other people going through things and that you can find support.
Yeah. Well, I think you accomplished that in your book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I really enjoyed talking with you this evening. And we're getting really close to that time because we have another host coming on in just about 5 minutes. So let me just get into my closing statements. And before I even do that, I want to say thank you very much to Casey Chafee, author of 30 Days to Understanding Chronic Illness and Pain. Tracy, on one of the social media sites, and got to know her a little bit through that and read her book, and I just feel like she has so much to offer, so I hope folks will take a peek at that book. And where can they find that, your book, Casey?
It's on Amazon, so you can find it there.
Okay. Okay. And her last name is C-H-A-S-F-E-Y. First name, Casey, C-A-S-E-Y. So go ahead, folks, and check that book out. So I just want to thank you so much, Casey, for joining me today and offering so much hope and help to other people, other survivors of different kinds of chronic illness and pain. And you can always check out her book on Amazon, and you can read the interviews, her interview actually, as well as many others, on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just look under the right sidebar and find Survivors of Traumatic Brain Injury. No, what is it? Survivors Speak Out. Yeah, that's the site name, but Survivors Speak Out. Okay, there's a lot of categories there. There's itty-bitty giant steps. There's brain injury resources. There's a place for guest bloggers. So if you want to be a guest blogger, please contact me at Donna O'Donnell Figursky at gmail.com. And you can find my name on the radio show here, on your thing. So DonnaOdonnellFigursky at gmail.com. So you can also read my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. You can find that on Amazon, on Goodreads. Well, you can't buy it on Goodreads, but on Barnes & Noble, Kobo. You can find it in your indie bookstores and in your library. And if they don't have it, ask for it. They can order it. Like I said, it comes out in ebook, in print book, and as an audiobook, which I read myself. So, yeah, go ahead and read it. And if you do read it, email me. Tell me about it. Tell me that you liked it. Or tell me that you didn't like it. I don't care. Just read it. So on the next show, I will be having a panel, and that will be on calendar. April 3rd. We will have a panel. It will be to be determined, actually. I know what it is, but I don't know what it is right now. So before I sign off, I always say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, why are you still here? But no, if you hated it, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50, and that would be Pacific time, we have to say goodbye. But stay tuned to the next show, and it will start at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So on that note, thank you all for coming to hear Casey Chafee, author of 30 Days to Understanding Chronic Illness and Pain, and me. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Casey, for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Good night, everybody, and stay safe and healthy, and have a great week. Bye-bye.